Golden Age Hollywood was known for its glamour, opulence, and control over every aspect of the American film experience, but the age had a tough birth. By 1930, Hollywood studios were facing two existential threats: the artistic transition from silent to sound pictures, and more importantly, economic survival during the Great Depression. Both are at the heart of a new novel from a first-time author and film historian. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Stephen Painter has a master's degree in film studies, and his new book, Take Her for a Ride, takes place in and around Hollywood circa 1930 and involves more than a few classic films. Stephen Painter, welcome to the program. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us by phone. I want to ask you, you know, we don't usually discuss narrative fiction on this show, but this is a great exception, a novel filled with Hollywood lore and inside history of the making of a number of important films. The subtitle for your title, Take Her for a Ride, right underneath, says A Hollywood Story. Can you give us a brief synopsis of where this novel takes us?
Okay. It's set in 1931 Hollywood. And the story revolves around a producer named Paul at Universal. And so Universal at this time was considered one of the minor studios. And they didn't have any stars. They had little money to make movies. So he's tasked with actually saving the studio from bankruptcy at the start of the Great Depression. And so films like Dracula, Frankenstein, that great monster series that Universal was known for in the 30s, is what he comes up with. There's a second subplot or second form of the narrative which follows Lillian Nelson, who's an actress at Warner Brothers, and Paul and Lillian are boyfriend and girlfriend, and she's trying to make it into Hollywood in the 1930s, and she doesn't have a theatrical background, so she's one step behind a lot of the actors who came over from Broadway at that time because they had a familiarity with sound and they had great voices, so the Broadway actors had a leg up on somebody from the sticks who was just coming out to Hollywood with a dream. So
yeah,
that's basically where the story goes.
It's interesting how you flip back and forth. You know, we get sort of the view from the executive suite at Universal through this fictional producer who's, as we drop into the story, is beginning to work on Dracula, which the hope is will save that studio from economic ruin in the Great Depression, but also build it into something more than a minor studio. But I love that you've got this other character, Lillian, at Warner Brothers, who we can kind of watch climb the ladder and then see what the experience maybe circa 1930 of an aspiring actress might have been, the pitfalls and things she has to maneuver through to just try to work her trade in a very male-dominated world there. This clearly, given the context of 1930 and everything that's happening in Hollywood at the time, clearly is a fascination for you. I'm wondering, is this something you studied working on your master's, or is it just a period that's always intrigued you?
Yeah, it was something that I studied during my master's. But just in general, the 1930s, probably one of the most perfectly picked out decades, I guess you can say, where it starts with the stock market crash and October 1929, and then it ends September 1939 with Hitler invading Poland. So when you talk about the 1930s, you're actually talking about 1930 to 1939, whereas with other decades, that's not always the case. But certainly Hollywood at this time, I had a great interest in, because you have the transition from silent movies to sound movies, and then you also have the pre-code era, and then you got the post-code, and at the end of the decade, you start having these more propagandistic movies where the U.S. is getting ready to go into World War II. So it's an interesting time for film history as well.
And at least the period you're covering in the novel, you can also see, for film buffs who know a little bit of that period, the beginning of what the rest of the decade would hold for, say, Warner Brothers and Universal. Universal becoming very well known for its horror films. And in your competing plot lines, you've got Warner Brothers beginning work on what would become a hallmark of that studio for a while, the gangster film. Both studios beginning to move into that territory. And audiences, I guess, are no different now than then. In times of turmoil, we turn to scary films and films about the underworld.
Right, yeah. I felt that both Universal and Warner Brothers were doing the most interesting types of films at this time. MGM was glitz and glamour, and Paramount was similar, and then you had RKO, who came out with the Astaire Rogers musicals, but Universal was pretty much doing their horror films, but then they'd also bring out a women's weepy like Imitation of Life or Backstreet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Warner Brothers, of course, you have the great gangster movies with Cagney and Robinson, but then they do you know, Paul Mooney with a social problem film, or Busby Berkeley with one of his
musicals.
So they were just pretty diverse in the output.
The novel, other than these two main characters and this producer Paul, his secretary Vera, is pretty much populated with names of characters that are actual people that we would recognize as stars, producers, moguls, studio chiefs. I'm wondering how you approached that. Did you take any liberties with the actual history that's going on here? Or it, at least from my knowledge of the period, it seemed extremely accurate.
Yeah, well, you definitely, when you use people who actually existed, you want to be as accurate as possible. But at the same time, I didn't live in 1930, 31, so I can't give you a completely accurate picture. So I used basically stories from the movie sets that I use in the novel. And then, like, Carl Lindley Jr. is a pretty big character in the novel.
Yes.
And there's not a lot written about him. And what is written about him is fairly negative. People look at him as a product of nepotism or a dunce, or, you know, he's 21 years old when he becomes the head of Universal Studios. So being somebody who had been 21, I sort of took the stories that I'd heard about him plus my own experiences at that age and sort of created the character that you see. So it was a little bit of piecing together what I knew about that age, that time period, and what I had read actually happened on set.
Your two leads, Paul, the producer, and Lillian, the actress, I'm wondering if you had models in real-life actors and producers that you used to kind of create an amalgam for those characters, or were they just wholly your creation of what you thought might have happened at the time?
Well, Paul was actually more of the Humphrey Bogart character. So somebody like Rick Blaine in Casablanca or Sam Spade in Peace Falcon, I sort of saw him as being that type of person. Lillian was actually based on Thelma Todd, who's a character in the novel as well. So they have a little bit of a older sister, younger sister relationship, and that was pretty easy to write since I was pretty much doing the same character twice.
You know, you've got these fictional characters interacting with actual historical characters, and there's lots of dialogue in this novel. I'm wondering if you ever felt uncomfortable trying to get into the psyche of some of the actual historical characters and how they would talk and what they would say and what their motivations are. Or were you just free to, because there's been enough time gone by that you can put words in people's mouths?
Well, I was actually looking at how they appeared on screen. Somebody like Louise Brooks or James Cagney, especially when he appears, I was trying to write like a James Cagney would write, or with a sound on film. So some of the actors, it was pretty easy to write because I could watch the movie, sort of get their cadence down, and then put in what I knew about the background that was going on at this time. The moguls, on the other hand, were a little bit more difficult because I didn't have easy access to what they sounded like. So I struggled a little bit and probably took more liberties than I did with the other characters when I was writing Daryl Zanuck or Jack Warner or Paul Lindley Jr.
Right, where there's less historical data on them. I'm wondering, you know, this is written for the 1930s, early 1930s, and that was a. Were there any influences from the writing perspective, not the film perspective, that influenced the making of this novel? I'm thinking particularly this was a time when Dashiell Hammett was writing.
Yeah, definitely. Raymond Chandler, he's my favorite author. And he was certainly writing about Los Angeles at this time period, but Hammett as well, all that hard-boiled fiction definitely has a influence on the writing style that's present in the novel.
So did you just wake up one day and say, I want to write a novel about Hollywood, or was this something that slowly germinated over time?
No, it was definitely a process. I intended to write a historical novel about the death of Thelma Todd, and so I had written a rough draft and was getting through it, revising it, and I just said this isn't going anywhere. So I decided to scrap that and come up with something else that involved Hollywood at this time period. And so I said, well, the fame and stardom, that's always a nice theme, so I'll have an actress. But then we don't really see anything about producers. And so I decided to throw a producer in there, and that's sort of how the idea started.
Yeah, you mentioned the term historical novel, and when I think of historical fiction, I don't immediately think of Hollywood, but this was an interesting blending of the fictional with very specific Hollywood history. I feel like someone reading the book who's not that familiar with maybe the inside story of Hollywood would come away with a pretty good appreciation. It's obviously not quite a history book of Hollywood, but it has lots of historical notations in it. I'm wondering just how much research you had to put in to create the novel.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of research, 3-4 months at the library, just going over the different stories and the promotional materials for the films, and then certainly reading biographies of the major characters who appear. So there is research in there that made it in the book, and of course there's stuff that I had read or seen that didn't actually make it into the book. So it was definitely a process.
You were here recently in El Paso, August 3rd, I believe it was, for a book signing at the Barnes & Noble on the west side of town. How did that go for you?
That went pretty well. There were people there, and they were receptive to the book, and the people at Barnes & Noble were great. And I've done a couple book signings ranging from Los Angeles to I'm based in Tucson. Tucson was good, and I'm originally from Las Cruces, so I've done book signings throughout the borderland.
Oh, great. You've got a regional connection.
Yeah.
You have something else in the works? Another novel, perhaps, that we can be looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm actually working on the next book in the series, so that's going to be set in 1932. And in 1932, we have the Olympic Games in Los Angeles. And from the filmic perspective, there's the Mummy at Universal. And then I'm going to have to give Lillian some original movies to do. I'm not going to keep putting her in things that maybe people have heard of, but I'm trying to work that out.
Fabulous. Well, I wish you all the success with the book and your writing career, and thanks for sending me a copy. I do want to mention that given that it's Hollywood 1930, there is some adult material in this book, but thanks so much for talking with us, Stephen.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
My guest today has been Stephen Painter, film historian and author of the new novel, Take Her for a Ride. The novel is set in Hollywood circa 1930 and 31 and is filled with real-life actors, producers, and movie moguls, as well as the inside history on the making of some of the cinema's most iconic films. Take Her for a Ride is available locally at the Barnes & Noble at Sunland Park or through the usual major online retailers. For more about the novel's author, Stephen Painter, and to read the first chapter of the book, log on to StephenMPainter.com, and that's Stephen with a V. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.